Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We're going to go ahead and replay that, and I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And good morning, Kevin Miller with you, our great friend Dave Pezzo with us, as we take a look at the big financial news of the day, the week, the month, the summer of just kind of chilling out where the markets kind of take time off and the computers run everything. Well, not really, Dave Pezzo, but good morning
to you. Yeah, good morning to you, Kevin. It is slower, though. You're right. Summer's slower.
Summer is slower. Does this mark the official kickoff of summer?
No, not really. No, I mean, it does from a calendar perspective, but really when you're talking about summer on Wall Street, it really is July, August. It's after the 4th of July.
You know, what can you do? And I know that you do such a great show on Saturdays here for over 25 years at 580KIDO to get people to understand that the markets are okay. And you have 80 or 90% of Americans still not in the markets. You have this presidential election coming up, and even though we've had an anti-business president, the markets have been fairly decent to folks, I'd say, and I know that's an understatement.
Yeah, it has. They have been good. And I, Kevin, it's been historically, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, and that's the thing with the market that strikes me. You can look at the history of the market. It's fantastic. It just goes to all-time highs. It's averaged 10% for your whole adult life, your whole childhood, your parents' lives, your grandparents' lives, 10. And no other investment has come close. I mean, not even close. And so the real problem is we define risk by day-to-day movements in price rather than what the long-term objective is. And when we have to keep coming back to that and reminding ourselves of that. We have the sense of that we can somehow know what the market's going to do, or we should have known what the market was going to do, and everybody saw this financial collapse coming. I can't believe how many people saw it. It's just weird that some few were actually positioned for it. But you see this all the time, because in the rearview mirror, everything does appear quite obvious. But we start thinking we can time things, we should move around. Maybe there's this new product out that has some kind of a guarantee that I won't lose money. We gravitate towards that because we see risk wrong. We see it in price fluctuations rather than will I have enough money to outlast me no matter how long I live. You know, that's the fundamental thing, but people measure risk in very weird ways.
Or my personal favorite, you just have enough so when you're done, your money's gone.
That's right, you know, right, right. The best retirement plan is the check bounces to the gravekeeper, right?
Right, exactly. You know, Dave Pezzo with us as we continue on, but we've had people from the Brookings Institute and others preparing for the next recession, and really, arguably, when we talk about growth, it's been all in the stock market. When we talk about real wages, real jobs, that hasn't happened, and people have kind of, even though the president has an over 50% approval rate, they've been awakening to the longest period of minimal economic real growth in the country.
Yeah. Well, as you have the presidential candidates bash each other, I think that the person that stands there and hasn't done anything has a feeling that he might be a good president compared to what we have coming, right? I think that's a normal political season, so I don't think he's getting a pass that he's got this great economy going. Kevin, I think that is the big disconnect for people and why they feel like they shouldn't invest, because they misunderstand markets. They misunderstand that Wall Street is not Main Street. And you and I have talked about this for years now, that you have to differentiate between the two when you're thinking about your regular investments. And when you think about that, it doesn't really matter if Wall Street is doing poor, it's doing great. It isn't a thing that you need to be out there trying to get in front of these great titanic shifts. The market, through bad times and good times, in other words, long periods of time, has averaged 10%. Even if you take a couple points off that, it's not exactly doomsday going forward. So I think that people misunderstand this need to equate market conditions, the economy, and try to figure out what's going on, what's wrong with the world. And when we get caught up in that, instead of moving forward, we miss the big picture, which is we continue to be technologically innovative. We come up with new stuff. The world keeps growing. More and more people, more and more, a higher and higher standard of living. That's the reality, not this idea that everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket tomorrow.
All right. Dave Pezzo with us here at 580KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Terry in State College, Pennsylvania, for Dave Petso. Terry, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Now, for years, you've been predicting an economic collapse, and you have openly challenged Dave Petso again and again, whether it's on his Saturday show or here. Let's get to it.
Okay. It doesn't matter who does the challenging. I just simply relay the message, and it's disagreed on by David. But now, last week, Alan Greenspan on Fox News very simply put it, Venezuela descends into martial law, and the U.S. is heading in the same direction. We have a global problem of a shortage of productivity growth, and we're heading towards martial law. So do you disagree with him also?
About martial law, I have no idea why Greenspan's talking about us going into martial law. I don't know what that has to do with the economy, but
the economy is dying.
The economy is dying, and we're going to martial law.
We're headed in that direction, he said.
Okay, well, I don't know. I don't.
Now, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't know?
I don't even know what to say to that. Greenspan says we're heading into martial law.
You're our Greenspan. Who needs him? We've got you.
I just don't even know how to react. Why would I think that we're going into martial law? I mean, that's
we're headed in that direction. He said, just like Venezuela.
Just like Venezuela. So Greenspan says we're just exactly like Venezuela.
Fox News.
All right.
As
well,
recorded on Fox News, yes.
Okay. Well, I really don't know how to explain that except to say I think that he's become senile. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. Who, as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, comes out with such incredible world-ending nonsense? I mean, really, we're going to become like Venezuela. Like, that's
we're
the context of his entire talk. Was we are just
said,
like,
you know.
I'm sorry, what?
No matter who says it, no matter what their success has been, you seem to disagree. And I thought, well, how about what Alan Greenspan said? Does it have any validity? Does it hold any weight whatsoever?
No, I don't disagree with everybody. That's absurd. I mean, to say I disagree with everybody, no matter what, because they don't agree with me. I'm just saying that taken in that context, that Alan Greenspan says that we're just becoming just like Venezuela. That's so out of context that I don't even know how to answer that.
For the third time, he said we are headed in the same direction. Just like Venezuela.
Well, we've been heading towards socialism, and in Venezuela is that direction, too. So what context would you like me to say? Do I agree that are heading that direction? Of course we are. We have been for my entire life.
Then would we disagree that it's accelerating or agree?
No, I think it is accelerating.
Okay, well, unbelievable. You and I, we agree.
All right, to be continued. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. From Yahoo Business, the Federal Reserve has a big problem if it wants to raise rates again. It will have to pay U.S. and foreign banks enormous sums of money instead of U.S. taxpayers. Not only would the Fed likely have to draw the ire of Congress, but it would also become a target of the next U.S. president, Clinton or Trump. That's because the gangbuster profits of $90 billion plus per year that the Fed remits to the Treasury could easily dwindle to zero, according to several leading economists. Your thoughts?
Yeah, when interest rates go up, then you don't have then they're going to have to pay more on the bonds that they have. So the answer is, yeah.
So we would
kind
look
of a no-brainer,
right? Apparently, the Fed is taking capital losses on its $4.3 trillion bond portfolio, and those losses will eventually accelerate when the bonds that the Fed holds mature. It realizes losses because it paid above market prices for most of them to begin with. So if you were on the Federal Reserve, what would you do?
Oh, I would love to have seen, especially about 18 months ago. You know how time is, but it's pretty right in that range. 1 to 2 years ago, when we had a window open that they could have easily dumped some of those bonds in the market. They're craving those bonds in the market. And if you will, the economy was doing much better. It felt like it was getting stronger and it had more confidence, and we did not have this strong dollar situation that everybody's concerned about. So that was a window to me that they could have dumped, oh, I don't know, a trillion of the 4 trillion that's on the balance sheet, and they would have actually been able to be profitable on those, and they would have been gone at that point. Now, I think it's a bit of an overstatement that they're going to be losing billions and billions and billions of dollars. Billions from the current value, yes. Billions of dollars that they have lost because it just goes away. No, the interest is going to be paid on the bonds, and the principal will be as well. So I don't see that as being a huge ongoing problem. It's just that they are put themselves in a box where they cannot go out and just dump $1 trillion worth of bonds on the market. That would not go well.
Let's continue on talking a little bit more about money with Dave Petso here at 580 KIDO. Consumer spending, the biggest jump in 6 years. People are buying more and more. We see that with the car business. We see it with other places, people buying homes and such. You go somewhere, you just can't say no to buying things these days.
Well, as a group, we're getting a little bit better. Remember, we really did since the recession here. Everybody pulled back, and they have not come back the way economists would have thought they did normally. So a continued improvement in overall spending, I would expect, as we continue to play catch-up to our old habits. It doesn't mean we've hit this, if you will, craziness that we did in the mid-2000s, where we just put everything on the ATM called our house or home equity line, right? We're not at that situation at all, Kevin, but it's good to see the consumer coming back.
Right. Again, though, if they can afford this, let's go to Tom in Boise with Dave Petzl and Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just a little while ago, we heard about what was potentially in the 9/11 report, and when we found out there was a connection with the Saudis and stuff like that, we kind of didn't want to reveal anything because the Saudis threatened us economically. And it seems like we ran with our tail between our legs. What does Dave? What do you think would have happened had we gone ahead and revealed that information and just let the cards lay where they may? If the Saudis would have pulled out of our economy, and how that would have affected the market?
It's really a national security issue. The Saudis are one of the only people, and of course it's questionable, but they're only people that have a reasonable head on their shoulders in the Middle East. So I think it's a security question. As far as economically, I think it's laughable. We're going to not buy your government bonds. Well, who cares? It's like saying we're not going to buy your oil. Well, so the global supply of oil will do what? You know, it'll expand? No, it won't, and there are plenty of buyers for U.S. bonds. The economy will be fine, and they don't have that much here. They're just not that significant an investor in the United States. So completely idle threats. They have no intention of going anywhere. They just don't like to be told, or they don't. They want to get their way, and they don't want to continue to pretend that they're really the United States' close friends.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, more coming up next. You're listening to Kevin Miller, Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station 580KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station 580KIDO. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station, 580KIDO.
And we continue on with our great friend Dave Petzl here. This is interesting from USA Today. Wall Street is eyeing markets in June with suspicion and trepidation as traders monitor a number of potential shocks that could derail Dave Petzl and his stocks this summer. Investors are on high alert, even though the Dow Industrial Average is coming off its best week, weekly advance in 10 weeks. The Dow's 2.1% jump was its best since the week ending March 18th. The angst driving folks home by the foreboding language that evokes coming storms used by Wall Street strategists in recent investment reports warns that the markets are entering event risk June, which could culminate in a summer of shocks. Dave Petzl, do you agree that there are landmines ahead this summer?
There's always landmines out there. Always. Always. I love headlines. Aren't headlines the
and
most depressing thing in the world?
I have the specifics for you.
You do.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Fire
the Fed hikes interest rates.
Yep. Foregone conclusion.
Stocks fell 12% the last time the Feds did that.
Yes.
And you're fine with that. That's not a summer of shock to you.
No. First of all, it's hard to shock people when it is expected. It's hard to shock people the second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever time, right? We get used to these things. It just becomes the way it, and the market's priced it in.
Well, your favorite punching bag, the media, will be reporting on this, as they should. And then you'll have your award-winning commentary about it.
That's right. Listen, it's just like this headline. They come up with something every month. We're worried about May. Sell in May, go away. May turns out to be a pretty good month. Well, then we have we're worried about June. Listen, it's always a bad news story. And markets correct. So for us to sit around and fuss about the idea that the market could go down 12%, then you simply can't invest, which is weird to me. If you don't need the money for the next 20 years or the rest of your life, you just want the income that it produces, why do you care about 10% price movements? And although people will act like they don't, they still try to guess when the market's going to tank or do whatever
it does. That's a big 10%, though, if you're living off that.
But that's my point. If you're not living off of it, what if you're living off of the income it generates rather than the principal?
What if you're living on it?
If you're
Let's move on.
Good call.
The jobs report coming out very soon. Now, you remember growth was weaker than expected last time, only 160,000 new jobs created in April. You know, it's a double-edged sword with jobs. It's strange, and maybe you can explain it to us here at 580KIDO, Dave, that on one hand, if there are too many jobs, that impacts the stock. But if people are speculating that if it's another weaker than expected job growth, then that's going to negatively impact the confidence of consumers.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that we ought to bear in mind here. First of all, if interest rates do get jumped, do get jacked up a whole quarter of a point, I think it's important that people understand this because the commentary is not talking about the fact that when interest rates are this low and interest rates are raised, it's a good thing for the stock market. It's always bad, and especially when people, whether you listen to Jim Cramer or not, he's the best known commentator out there. And he's dead wrong. Screaming and yelling about the Fed raising interest rates is going to be destructive to the stock market. We may have a reaction, Kevin. It could be like it was early in the year when the market reacted negatively. Maybe the market earlier this year reacted to all kinds of other things, like the economy slowing down. There are lots of reasons why markets do what they do. People love to point their fingers. But here we are a few months later, and we're higher. And that's exactly what the market has done historically. If you want to make the call, the big call, it's a big call. But you're welcome to make it. But I'll take the other side of that bet, that when the Fed raises interest rates and they are this low, the stock market 100% of the time has been higher 6 months later, 100% of the time. Now, that's a crazy thought. There's hardly any indicators that are – I don't know of any better. How can you be better than 100%? And it certainly has not worked out the way the bears like to talk about. Now, if interest rates are higher and they're raised, they're raised for a different reason. It's called inflation, and that is not good for the market, and it doesn't do well. Don't mix the two together as we're trying to prognosticate what's going to happen over this summer.
If the Feds raise interest rates, does that impact credit cards, car loans, home loans?
Absolutely. A teeny tiny bit. We're talking about a very, very small increase on a very high rate. Kevin, if your credit card is already at 22% or 18% or whatever the number is, that's pretty high, number one. Number two, unless the Fed raises rates a lot, they're not going to raise and go, now let's go gouge everybody for 18.25%. 18 is pretty good, and that's what
it's based on. But you have the banks that react to this, and don't they use that as a justification to raise rates?
On adjustable rate mortgages, absolutely. Adjustable rate loans,
or
absolutely.
New ones.
Or new originations,
right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
This is something that, again, may seem abstract to most of us here in the Treasure Valley at 580KIDO, but does it have an impact on our markets, on our portfolios? And it's getting a lot of international attention, maybe not a lot here, but Britain saying goodbye to the EU. Mm-hmm. Does that influence our money?
It will. There's no question about it. This we don't know how, Kevin. So everybody's out there trying to figure out, well, what if they did leave? This is a big economy leaving the euro. What would happen to the euro? Would that have a continuation? So it's a lot of what ifs and a lot of guessing because it's not happened before. You can't say, remember 10 years ago when the Spanish left or whatever, because this would be the first one and a very important partner. Other than Germany, this is an awfully important partner. So to answer your question, Kevin, we don't know really, but it is the talk of Europe. It's the talk of Wall Street. What will happen if this June vote goes? So, back to your scare headlines. June's got a few things. So will July. So will August and so on. And sometime next spring, something that's not even on our radar will be in the headlines. So it is always an ongoing. There's going to be potential problems right now. So far, the polls appear, and more importantly than the polls, appears to be the betting line. The betting line is that Britain will not leave the euro. But it does have a financial impact globally. We just don't fully appreciate or can't until we go through it.
And when we take a look at the Gem State itself, a lot of people will be visiting here this summer. Are you surprised by the continued growth, not only in our area, but in Twin Falls? And we go back to Chobani. I mean, $100 million anywhere is a big investment.
It is. And, Kevin, it doesn't surprise me in the fact that everybody in a mobile society, we are mobile, and our money's mobile. And with the technology, the computer age, many jobs are telecommuting. The people can live where they want to live. And that is, it brings people to Idaho. Who doesn't love it here? If you don't, then you probably should leave, but you really need to be checked into a hospital, because there's something clearly wrong with people that don't love this area.
I see. I guess that's it for you, Dave Pett. So anything else that you would like us to know?
I'm being tossed.
Well, no. I think we're going to end on that. If you don't like Idaho, get out.
That sounds like a reasonable bumper sticker, doesn't it?
Apparently. Love it or leave it.
Love it or leave it.
Dave Pezzo, where can we get a hold of you?
At PetzoFinancial.com.
At the Pezzo Center downtown.
You got it. That's it. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Dave. You're listening to Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's Talk Station.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw six war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. Four figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Nurse with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us, 580-KIDO. It is our number, and of course, if you would prefer email, that's just fine. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. That's our live email address. So do shoot those over as well. And right now, right off the bat, we've got a caller. Thank you, Warren, and thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hey, yes, good morning, Mr. Pezzo. First of all, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question concerning some money that my wife inherited from her mother when she passed.
Okay.
It's roughly $50,000, and we just got it sitting in a safe deposit box. And what we want to do with it is look to put it somewhere that we can get an income stream, or my wife can get an income stream once I check out. A little background, we're both retired. I'm 73, she's 69. We own our house and cars and all that stuff. But when I pass, then she will be able to take my Social Security, but she will lose my military retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want is another income stream to support her, because of my Navy military will be gone. My question is, where would you suggest we put this to get this a good income stream? We don't need it now, but sometime in the future we will need that. So where would you suggest we put this?
Great question, and well thought out. I mean, you have to think forward to many of these things. And the other thing that happens to so many people is they will lose their Social Security as well. So she'll get yours, but she won't get hers anymore, right?
That is correct.
So people can take a really big hit when either of the two spouses passes away, and so you're planning ahead for that, and I think that's just very wise. Because obviously one of you is going to go before the other, unless you're killed in a fiery crash, right?
Absolutely.
So you're going to, one of you is going to have some time, and you're also quite right. It's probably going to be her. So, great thinking. So what we really are thinking now is let's let that money grow and then turn it into an income stream. And what we want to try to do is have that money growing in a moderate risk way. Now, you can't do it with no risk. You know how much you're being paid in your savings account, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
That's not going to work. That won't grow. In fact, you're actually losing money to inflation every year. And so I think we have to think in terms of where am I going to be in 20 years when probably we're attending one of our funerals, right? So what are we trying to do with the 20-year time frame? To me, it's very simple. A diversified portfolio of the great corporations of the world, yes, stocks, but I would focus on the dividend payers, not just dividend payers, but the dividend increasers. And those are the ones in the market that have these characteristics. They are have the best balance sheets. They grow faster than the average market, average stock does, and their income grows extremely quickly. Now, by saying that, what we're saying is 10 years from now and 20 years from now, if I'm only getting, let's just call it 2%, just to put a number on it, I'm getting 2% on my original investment, then it becomes 4, then it becomes 6, and then it becomes 10, it becomes 15. That's the history of dividend increasers, if we think of it in static dollars, like I just put my $50,000 in, because they raise dividends rapidly. And I'm sure you've heard me talk before about what the general S&P has done, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's gone up massively, approximately threefold on average per decade in income. That's crazy high numbers. So if we're thinking that in terms, instead of we don't want the non-dividend payers in our portfolio, we don't necessarily want the highest dividend payers. We want those that are growing rapidly. Imagine focusing a portfolio like that, diversified, and going global has done with your income. It's done even better than that. And that's really what we're trying to do is grow a stream of income. Right now, you can reinvest it, and that's the great part, and it'll compound even more quickly. But when you need to, you can dial in and turn on that income stream. And so that is exactly what I would focus on. Buy stocks of the great corporations.
So I am understanding you're saying buy a moderately risk income, which is what I have, but some good dividend-paying stocks and some stocks that I have increases in it, and that's where you would suggest I put this money.
I would just have a mutual fund of those, right? Not one, but you have two or three. You could have one that focuses more internationally, one U.S., and one maybe that blends a little bit of corporate debt in there that would help you compound, meaning it juices the income a little bit so you have a little bit more compounding in a down market. Okay. As kind of a safety valve, if you will. That would be more my approach, and I would prefer stocks from a tax perspective because they're tax deferring a lot of the gain.
Mm-hmm.
You're taxed at a lower level on dividends and capital gains than you are in ordinary income. So there's a number of advantages to using stock dividends over anything else. And, in fact, here's the big advantage. Nothing's even come close return-wise, risk-wise. And if we focus on what we need to focus on, and that is the driving higher and higher income, it's been a terrific investment over the decades, over beyond your lifetime.
Well, thank you, sir. That's the information I need. I've written this down, and I think I'll go ahead and take your advice, and I appreciate your time. You have a great day, Dave.
You do the same, Warren. Thank you for your call.
You
have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Very forward-thinking. I really like that. You know, you're planning for where, you know, for the inevitable. One of us is passing away, and pensions will be lost. It's a big deal. And so we're planning forward for that day. That's great, great stuff, Warren. Thank you. Thank you. And our number here is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to actually stay on track today and get one of our breaks done and give you a chance to give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us, 580-KIDO. That's our number, that would be your cue to ring us up. There's nobody on the line except, well, soon to be you, I hope. And if you do prefer email, that's fine. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. A couple things I want to talk about today. I one of these we'll get to in the second hour, And since we've got a long block here, if you guys want to talk, I'd like to talk. I'd rather listen to you and talk about what you want to talk about. But a couple of things bother me lately. I don't know if bother is the right word, but one of them's a bother. So I'm going to start with that one. It's doomsday. It's always doomsday. Why? Why is it always doomsday? I mean, why do we feel that way? And I know we're wired that way. I get that. I talk about it all the time. We're wired that way. We're wired for the end of the world. But it's not that. It's not that aspect of it that I'm talking about. It's why do people argue so vehemently for doomsday? Like nothing is ever okay. Nothing ever is working okay. Or it may not even be working okay, but it's like there's always this huge argument. Like, you're wrong. You're wrong. We're all going to die in a fiery crash. Okay. Chill, man. Why? Why such angst over that? And I'm not sure I have an answer. I'm not sure. But I've been thinking about it, and I think this is a huge problem for people. Now, I know there's people that you're never going to change. And I know for those people, they don't even think I'm talking about them. Or if they know or they recognize I'm talking about them, they're just like, well, who cares? I'm right. I'm intellectually superior to the rest of the people. I already know what's going on or what's going to happen. And that's fine. But the problem is for the rest of us, there's so much of this really super negative noise that it pulls us away from making investments, from expanding business, from all of those things. I firmly believe that when we get this guy out of the White House, as an example, I don't think Hillary can, but it'll be better regardless. That we will have the potential, I should say. Let me rephrase this. So we have the potential to unleash massive amounts of entrepreneurship, where all this last several years we've just been pounded as entrepreneurs, just pounded with more regulations. That's not enough regulations. Let's double it. Let's triple it. We need to expand more of the big government buildings in D.C. Not locally, not entrepreneurs. So it's everything. But then you rain on top of that. You rain on top of that. Everybody, you know, is all terrible, and the Federal Reserve is all going to collapse, and then the pigs nations, and the bird flu. It's everything all the time. All the time. We never look to say, wow, isn't that a pretty morning? No, there's got to we look and find what's wrong with the day. It's going to be hot today. This afternoon is going to be really hot. So we can't enjoy this moment, this morning. Later it's going to be really hot. So we create misery where there isn't any all the time. So what does that have to do with anything? It has everything to do with whether we invest or don't. And when we think about it, you have a situation where with stocks, it's really like this. All of our life, for 100 years, no, sorry, 200 years, this is how it works. The market, as if it's just like a weird game over here on the side. No, let me rephrase it. Instead of calling it the market, like it's an abstract, weird thing out here, it's not. The collection of the great corporations of the world over here, prices get bid up to all-time highs. And then they correct. Sometimes more severely than others. Sometimes they just kind of float around and move sideways for a while. And then they go to all-time highs again. And then they correct. And they go back to all-time highs. And then they correct. And in between, they pay these things called dividends. And those dividends over the years have gone up faster. Faster, collectively, than anything else on the planet. So what I want to do is I want to take this easy thing that is the best balance sheets, the best growth, and I want to turn it into, but, you know, the market is going to fall like 10%. You see what that guy said over there? This guy over here, he's really well known. You know, like he used to run the Mint. Yeah, so he knows money. Okay. Yeah, I saw that commercial on TV, too. I thought, are you kidding me? That's not weird. You know, Yes, he used to run the Mint, so that's our expert on the financial markets. He tells us you need to buy gold.
Okay.
Why is it always so negative? It doesn't even have to be positive. It's just, why are we always looking for what's wrong? Not that we shouldn't try to fix things. Not that this hasn't been practically a criminally bad administration. They're horrible. I get that. And they do things without following the rules. I get that. And corporations around the world have figured out, with various levels of corruption in government, various levels of taxation, various economies, how to continue to be profitable. But that doesn't solve the doomsayers. It's not. It's like this feeling of I've got to be right. That the world is coming to an end. By golly, it is. I don't, and you're stupid because you don't believe it is. Okay. But what gain is there from that? And I would surmise it's all loss. And this is important. Because if we are sitting there having all of this, if you will, financial pornography raining on us all the time. And then on top of that, you got financial horror show. Right? I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. All that stuff running through my head. And then I get up and do it again the next day. And the next, and the next, and the next. And what does that do for me? Does that help me have clarity? Do we really think so? And I know for those of you who are betting yourself in the doomsday reports and have lots of blogs and lots of stuff you go to and, you know, yeah, well, this guy was really smart and that went over there and this was the budget director over there. And yeah, I got it. Perfect. And I'm sure you know how to just kind of navigate through the articles that matter in something like that and ignore the rest of them, right? You ignore the horror shows around the edges because you're above that. None of us are. If all we ever do is read about, think about, blog about how horrible everything is. Well, you're not only a bore, but you can't possibly function. Economically, you just put it all under a rock or you buy pet rocks. That's what conservative, high-thinking people do. They buy pet rocks. You see, it's a really super important thing, and I'm just not sure why. I don't understand. I just don't understand why it feels, I feel like, often I have arguments with people about nothing. It's not like you're being overly optimistic. I think I'm optimistic. But I also think that that's the only realism. I mean, you want to put it on a bumper sticker, it'd be something like this. Stuff works out. It kind of does. That's it. Kind of works out. And I get it. I get it. I get it. Everything's so different. So massively different. We're in this complete revolution. It's like everything's upside down. All the values and morals that we grew up with, they're all just gone. And we argue about bathrooms. I mean, there's no amount of money that the government can't spend just print. I get it. I get it. But to sit there and ignore, like this is the first time this kind of stuff has happened. It's crazy. It happens all the time. And we run from one bad thing to the next. And in the meantime, people turn this 200-year rising streams of income, go to all-time highs, have corrective modes, go to all-time highs, go to all-time highs, go to all-time highs. Rising stream of income faster than anything else on the planet. Nothing's even close. And turn it into, I need to learn how to trade this? What's the matter with you? You can't. You can't. And there isn't any reason to hide under a rock or buy pet rocks. They don't produce any income. I suppose, I don't know how, but maybe in the bunker, when everything ends, the bad guys that are after your food and stuff, well, you can slip pet rocks out the slits in the bunker and they'll leave you alone. I don't know. Not sure how that works. And I'm not sure why, but see, the thing is, it's almost like people would be giddy about it. It's like, oh, goody, goody, I was right. The world is ending. Wow, that's fun. It's almost that. It's like no matter what is going okay. If we have, for example, which we had a disastrous job report, so I'm certainly not talking about that, but if you had like a good jobs report, it'd be like, it doesn't matter because it's all something phony. It's phony. So when something's good, it's phony. It can't continue to happen. And it's so critically important for our feelings about moving forward of investing. And if you don't think there's going to be a future 20 or 30 years from now, then why wouldn't you just have a big party? Spend all your money. Because you might be wrong, huh? You might be wrong. You know, always the question is, well, what if? Yeah? Well, what if that doesn't happen? Well, it will. Hasn't before? Well, will this time, because all of that and all of this, blah, 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 and you just run through the same cycle of headlines. And then people just grab something, right? You know, it's like, just whatever, you know, Warren Buffett said. No, he didn't. He said a whole bunch of things, and then you took one sentence out of it and said, yeah, you said the world is coming to an end. That sounds like Warren Buffett, doesn't it? That's exactly the way Warren Buffett talks. But people grab that. Again, to try to make a case, take things out of context. But why? What's the point? What is the point? I don't understand how that is helpful to always be thinking doom and gloom. And you can say, well, Dave, you know, you have to be thinking about and conservative and all. I get that. That's not what I'm talking about. You can always be concerned. You hold a little cash over here. In the second hour, I'm going to talk about comparing things and what your portfolio looks like at different times. I mean, if you're pulling income, you don't have it all out there in stocks, not unless you can live just on the dividends. You have cash. You have things like you have balance. We'll talk about that. But to miss the last 30 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, because you know for sure it's all going to end multiple times, makes no sense to me. And when we just continue to dive in and dig up and only talk about and think about the negative and what's wrong, I don't know how you can rise above that. Clearly, most people don't. They simply don't. It's not all good. It's just that it's not all bad. And we do have to think forward. I'll talk to you after Fox News.
Get your tickets now for the largest one-day festival in Idaho. The Idaho Lottery presents the Boise Music Festival, Saturday, June 25th at Expo Idaho. It's a full day of live music on six stages with more than 60 bands, plus vendors, a kids' play area inside Expo Idaho, tons of tasty food, and the Rainier Amusements Carnival. Get your pre-sale wristbands now at BoiseMusicFestival.com. This year, the Commercial Tire main stage welcomes Andy Grammer, Nelly, along with Coolio and Daughtry.
don't wait. Ticket prices go up as each level sells out. Upgrade to a VIP experience in the cool zone or buy pit passes to get next to the main stage. The Boise Music Festival, presented by the Idaho Lottery, Commercial Tire, Carl's Jr., and Bud Light, the official beer of the Boise Music Festival.
Sponsored by Little Caesars, CWI, the City of Boise, Pepsi, and Aquafina.
Tickets and details at BoiseMusicFestival.com.
Of Money Matters, and of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not this station, broker-dealer. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, 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 or sell, sell, sell. Nothing nonsensical like that. Somebody gave me an article and, you know, talking about how bad the rates of return have been for Jim Cramer's. He sells this thing that you can invest right alongside him. And it's absolutely a horrifyingly bad return for over the last 15, 16 years that he's done it. But and he doesn't deny that, but this idea that we're going to talk about what to buy, 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 and sell, 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 and that's actionable for people is ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. And so if we do mention a stock, I, even positively, I'm not saying you should own it because I don't know how it would fit in your portfolio. So we're here hopefully to grow together, to think together, and to, if you will, as I touched on in the first hour, sometimes just kind of encourage ourselves not to fall into this pit of despair that it's all bad and there's no way you can do well in this world and you just can't. Or that even when we can't stop today and recognize how amazing it is to be alive today in the greatest country in the world. We live better. At any level, you live better than way over 99% of the people in human history, kings included. You know, it's just, it's amazing, though, when we take that and we hit, maybe, I don't know, this is more of a psychological question, a spiritual question, actually. Why is it when we have so much more that we are so discontented? I don't know. But when it comes to investing, it's a very critical question that we ask ourselves. Why am I always leaning towards the negative? Why? Why do I always go that way? You know, I had an email come this past week from a client who's sending it out. You know, I know you don't like all this stuff that comes, I'm sure, but this one struck me as interesting, and I did this thing over here and this little account over here, and it's been awesome. Okay, great. And I know we all like to point out our winners, and we don't want to talk about what, you know, maybe the three other things we put over here that weren't doing so good, but that's okay. But the point is, and because I visited with this client a lot for the last zillion years, and it's always this question, well, how is this happening over here, and why are we in this thing over here? Okay, it's always a constant question, and that doesn't usually happen, so it stands out. And it's just some people are just wired that way, right? They're just like, they're fussed. They're fussed all the time, all the time, all the time. I mean, they don't get the simple concept, for example, that if your entire portfolio is doing well, you're not properly diversified. They don't get that. They think everything can and should, and in hindsight, it's easy to do, been moved to what is working or what's hot, and instead of actually having some things that aren't doing as well. But what that leads to be thinking about is, what are we comparing it to? You know, we often hear about, hey, you know, how are we doing on our portfolio? Well, let's talk about that. How are we doing? What are you comparing it to? Well, you know, the market. Well, but aren't you drawing income? Yeah, but we're in the market. You are with some of your assets, yes. So compared to what? So for the last 10 years, are you getting an increase in income and your portfolio sustaining itself? Yep, but how are we doing now? No, I just want to reset and understand. How are we doing compared to what? Well, the market. Why the market? And this is really an important point because this goes back to exactly what was happening. So this individual sends me an article on compounding dividend payers, which, of course, I think is exactly what we talk about all the time. Like, that would be new to me. But took that and then saying, this is what we, you know, why don't we do this with the income portfolio? Because you need income. You're taking income out. How are we going to compound that? I don't understand what you're, I truly don't understand the question. If you want to take X amount of dollars out of your portfolio every month, would it, how does the illustration of if only I was taking nothing and just buying dividend paying stocks and compounding them, what does that have to do with tea in China? What does it have to do with anything? But isn't it funny when we talk about or think about things in the market? Well, that's a good strategy over there. Yeah, it would be if you weren't pulling any income out. But you are. Or, yeah, that's a great strategy over there. But how come we're not doing that? Because your kid's going to college next year. Oh, yeah, okay. So we're shifting to meet our goals. Oh. So what we're really saying is we need benchmarks to our objective. Kind of hard to do, except you have to sometimes just stop and say, how am I doing compared to what I want to do? I think we're on track. Okay. Compared to what the Nikkei average is doing? I don't know. Right, because you're not just in the Nikkei. It's an amazing thing when you stop and think, oh, I like this strategy over here. Yeah, that's a good strategy. It's a great strategy when you're in that circumstance. But once again, what does it have to do with tea and China? That's not your strategy. It's not what you're doing now. If your objective, for example, is increasing income faster than inflation all the days of your life that you can't outlive, well, what does the Russell 2000 growth index have to do with anything? Or the S&P index have to do with anything? You see, when we're measuring this and thinking about it, you know, think about it like an income portfolio, it's super tricky. It really is to have cost of living adjusted income for 30 years. It's really kind of tricky. And you have to have buckets over here, if you will, reservoirs is what I call it, reservoir of cash or in this world where cash earns zero, it's hard. It's hard. It's really, really hard. You can't hold like 20% or 25% of the portfolio and earn zero on it. You're not going to keep up. It's hard. But it sure isn't an S&P, which is one of the most dangerous things to income. That's just hardly anything more dangerous historically than the big drops in the S&P. Hitting people at the wrong time in retirement wipes them out. But that's what we compare. Because human beings have a hard time with goals-based outcome. Like, my objective is to be, let's change it a little bit. My objective is to be healthy, vibrant, alive. What does that look like? Now we pull that back, right? That's my objective, okay? Well, you don't always get that, right? You don't. I mean, there's illness, there's all kinds of things. I mean, you think that's the objective? Probably is the same objective for somebody that has arthritis. Or some stomach disease. I mean, it's all kinds of things, right? that can come in and hurt it. You have to have, on any of your goals, a reserve to understand that you don't necessarily get to have everything you're going to want to have. And as we pull that back and we think about it, you also then have certain things that you can measure against, right? Like, am I exercising? Am I eating right? All those things that it would lead to a better chance of having a vibrant, healthy lifestyle. And the same is true as we're doing our investments, but you can't just measure it against one benchmark. It's too many things out there, too many possibilities, too many things in life that you want to do. What is your benchmark for finance? Is it the S&P 500? Then you better not pull income from it, because that's a bad benchmark. You can't own any bonds. You shouldn't have any cash. You're just completely at the whim of the ups and downs of the market. But the problem here is that's not a problem when you're building money up. Who cares? Goes up and down. Biting off our fingernails and stuff. Great stuff. But when you are building it up, it really doesn't matter. But when you take money out of something that has fallen in value, that's a big problem. That's a death spiral. So you have to have other things that aren't in the market, but we feel we need to measure it. And that's why it's so hard for people. But if we don't measure and compare the correct things, then we can find ourselves in a position where we're chasing returns that are inaccessible to us, where we're always feeling like losers, especially when markets are up. When markets are doing great, who wants a nickel sitting over here in a reservoir, earning nothing or earning little? Why in the world weren't you all in tech in 1999? And believe me, that really was true. That's how people felt. They really did. Why would you own any of that? Why are you with a value investor? Value? They've lost it. It's not the way the world works now, man. And so everybody's gravitating towards what already had worked. We know how that ended. We know how that ended with real estate. We know how it ended with gold at $1,800 an ounce. No, I hear that it's going to go to $3,000. It's going to go to $5,000. Come on, Peter Schiff, let's build that thing up. It can go more than $5,000, can't it? It goes bad in everything. I mean, doesn't it strike you as amazing when people are, how people keep jobs sometimes, right? I mean, we're talking to Goldman Sachs, right? Really brightest people in the room. So when oil is at $120 a barrel, it's going to $200. Now, remember, this is not somebody that just like sits around and goes, you know, I think interest rates might go higher or lower. Gold. I suppose that could go up to 2,000 an ounce. And what do you think about zinc? Oh, well, zinc, I think it's going to go down a little. No, they only do oil. That's all. They count the oil, you know, the oil floating around in the seas that's in storage, that's being pumped every day to make their predictions. In other words, they can't ever get it right when that's all they focus on. I'm not making fun of him. It's just that this is the same people that at $120, it's going to $200. And then they double down when oil prices are falling at $70, $80, that, no, it can't go any lower than this. But then when it gets to $30 a barrel, they're calling for $15. I'm not joking. You can mark tops and bottoms by these people every single time. And yet they're the experts, and we cling to, oh my gosh, can you believe it? I know, here's what's going to happen. Because the Goldman Sachs guy said that, or the UBS guy says this. Market's going to tank because fill in the blank. Yeah, and that guy was really smart in, you know, 2001 or whatever. We go through this all the time, where we compare to the wrong things, and we think we can outguess the markets, and we turn them into this craziness, this crazy chase of returns. I'm going to go into energy. I'm going to get into commodities. I need to go over here because the Chinese are buying up all this stuff. We're in this huge shortage of commodities. That was, I believe, Peter Schiff was the big person on that. All these things change. All the bubbles pop. All of them. And instead of being balanced and diversified, we feel like we have to be in front of the thing that's working the best right now. Why isn't all my money there? What are you measuring against? The market's been flat. Market, as measured by the S&P 500, has basically been flat for 2 years now. The international market's been down slightly. Foreign stocks, and if you're in emerging markets, and you should be, for any kind of a reasonable diversified portfolio, but nobody wants to be there. I know that, because right now it's not working. So why would I want to continue to lose money like I have for the last couple of years in this particular segment? What are you measuring against? Are you measuring against the index, the S&P 500, that's eked out a very tiny gain over the last 2 years? Out of an income portfolio, and you want to know why you're not keeping up with one particular index when the world index is down. Everybody wants to be diversified when the thing they thought was going to do the very best isn't. They're really glad they've got other stuff over here. When the market goes down, don't you need to be able to cash in your bonds at profitable levels or at no loss levels to feed the income stream? Isn't it good to have income raining into your reservoir consistently from all of your assets so it doesn't deplete very quickly? Of course. But that doesn't help you in a rip-roaring bull market that maybe only favors Google, no dividend, Facebook, no dividend, Priceline, no dividend, Amazon, no dividend. How come I'm not keeping up? Because that's all that's working, and you don't own a lot of that. You don't own only that. Well, why not? Well, because you want income. What are we measuring against? What are you trying to achieve? We get in this game of comparing all the time. What's the market doing? Is not relevant to what you're doing almost all the time. The market is not a one singular thing. And the market is the worst commentary in the history of the planet. Because the question is, how are the great corporations that you own through your mutual funds, through your own holdings, doing with what you want them to do, which is to increase cash flow to you as a stockholder faster than the rate of inflation all the days of your life? How are they doing that? That's not what we hear. Procter & Gamble raised their dividend for the 60th year in a row last year. But their price went down from 90 to actually below 80. Over 90 to below 80. A 20% drop. Do you think people were that owned Procter & Gamble were just giddy because, again, they got a raise? No. No. We focus on something that doesn't even matter. Price. Price. Price matters twice, when you buy and when you sell. And in between, it only matters what the asset generates. But we can't get our mind off, how am I doing? How am I doing? How am I doing compared to fill in the blank? How am I doing? We always feel we have to measure, and we have to measure accurately. We have to know if the bridge is going to go down. I get that in engineering. The difficulty with the market is when you buy something, chances are pretty high that you're wrong. It's not, I mean, right. If you're right 65% of the time, you're a rock star money manager. Seriously. That means a third of the time you're dead wrong. You can't put up a bridge and a third of the time it falls down. Two-thirds of the time, yeah, we got this one right. Isn't that great, guys? Yeah, but what about all the dead people over here? Well, you know, hey, it doesn't always work out. That's why we diversify. Because it doesn't always work out. And nobody knows the future, no matter how hard you look at it. No matter how wise you think you are. No matter how many blogs you read, no matter how much doomsday stuff you pour into you, you won't figure it out. The people that only are supposed to watch oil, one thing, they can count all the oil in the world, and they can't get the price right. Not they couldn't this time and the time before. They can't. Economists are only in existence so that psychics look good. I mean, it's an old line, but the point is, they can't get interest rates right. Oh, I spent all my time figuring out where the economy's going with the job. Look at the jobs number on Friday. Who nailed that? Nobody. Nobody. How do we miss that? I mean, we got all the data coming in. We know all this. We got zillions of pieces of data. Not even close. It's totally shocking. How about all the people that predicted interest rates had to rise because of the printing of money? They've been predicting that since 09, 08, excuse me. Wrong. You want to bet the farm on that? We have to diversify, and therefore you have to be aware of what you are comparing to. What are we trying to do? What do we accomplish? And in most cases, you literally have to stop and ask yourself, what am I trying to accomplish? Not, oh, well, everybody who is in my circumstance should have this particular index over here. There might be similarities, but I don't even know. You know, you have to really create your own index. We do, right? Piece of bonds, piece of cash, piece of this, and all that. Because inevitably, I know that's what human beings want to do. Got to compare. I got to compare. Got to compare. How am I doing? How am I doing compared to what? But it is at least important, even if we can't do it totally to our own goals, to at least understand how you are doing. If you want just to go and look at an index, have it be a relevant index, not an S&P 500. You can relate the S&P 500 to, say, a U.S.-only fund. How are they doing compared to that? That's probably a decent benchmark for that one investment. But to say, how am I doing compared to the S&P in a globally balanced and diversified portfolio, really? That's not comparable. And it does, when we do that, lead you to make bad decisions. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. I do have to take a quick break here. Hey, and do ring us up. It's time for us to visit. And if you prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Hey, do give us a call or email. Come on. Need some interaction here. I don't want to just hear me, and you don't want to just hear me. So let's give us a call. I'm sure there's some questions out there, some comments, and we'd love to visit with you. So do give us a call, 580-KIDO. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about this too, analysis to paralysis, right? Where we have this tendency as human beings to overanalyze things to the point where we're frozen, like we're going to get an answer. And again, bringing it back to that engineering analogy, right, is that we often do have this idea that we can dig through numbers and figure things out. And we want to. And that's what leads to all this technical mumbo-jumbo, the squiggly line and the double squiggly line and the triple top-shoulder thing leads us to know that the market's going to do what? We don't know. But we want something that we could, like, draw, you know, point A to point B equals C or all those things where we can somehow figure this stuff out. and you can't. And so I know there's that desire to go ahead and do that. We all want to figure that out. And so we overanalyze and don't do anything. And in engineering and in accounting, all the numbers add up, right? It does work. The columns add up. And in engineering, you can't have most of the time, you can't just have somebody tell you it's sure that it's not going to fall down. Your investments aren't. In engineering, there is no such thing. The bridge can't fall down. The dam can't break. The building can't collapse. It can't. It has to be 100% fail-safe. Investing isn't like that. It's not like that. It's just not like that. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. And, hey, thanks for taking the time for the nice encouragement. I appreciate the caller that called in and did that. So thank you. But right now, let's go to a caller that wants to stay and talk. Jim, thanks for calling.
Hello, Dave.
Hey there.
I've done a quick survey, and apparently I'm the only one that's listening. But
yes.
Everybody else is phone shy, apparently.
Well, we did have somebody, yeah, they didn't want to be on the air, but they just called in to give us a thumbs up. That was nice. I appreciate it. But I'd rather talk.
So I don't even have a cat to talk to, so.
So I'm it. I'm your cat. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you're somebody to talk to.
Just somebody to talk to. Okay.
No. You know, you only mentioned, it's interesting, you only mentioned the employment figures kind of in passing, you know.
Oh, no, that's big.
Well, they did, apparently they did suck. And with all this, like you say, all this incoming data mm-hmm. means absolutely nothing. And when they talk about the unemployment rate is down, and that's because a lot of people stop working. So what good is that?
It isn't any good. Do you know that 450,000 people left the workforce? 450,000.
Well, why the hell isn't that reflected in these numbers?
Well, it is. The unemployment rate went down because that's how we measure it. If we can just get more people on the Social Security rolls, oh, yeah, that's right, it's double like what it was 8 years ago. That's how many people they put on. Then they're out of the workforce.
Well,
get everybody not looking for
those numbers there, obviously, the rate would reflect what's correct.
It would. And that's why numbers like the workforce participation number is critically important. And we're right at 40-year lows, only because 6 months ago we were at 40-year lows.
Mm-hmm.
We're 0.2% higher participation than we were at a 40-year low 6 months ago. It's horrible. And yet, you're at 4.7% unemployment rate, but wages are hardly going up. People haven't had a raise for 10 years or whatever the number is, or 20. It just depends who wants to exaggerate or talk about whatever number they want. But the point is clearly people are not living better, that the job market isn't super strong unless you're a rock star engineer and a software company. And then it's really great for you. But it is not great for the average person out there at all. And these numbers are made up, and we do need a redo. I absolutely think it's time for a redo in all these numbers. And the idea that the greatest country in the world, we have no idea how many people are employed. Do you know that they said we had, 38,000 people were employed this quarter? No, it wasn't. It was some vastly different number than that, that hopefully two or three more revisions from now we might get close.
Well, you know, I mean, it's been done like this from day one, and I don't know. That's why it gets frustrating. I mean, especially to an analyst, a good analyst, or an accountant, or whatever. You know,
right?
When numbers are, you know, you've got to have correct, you know, numbers. And what's interesting is to see a politician trying to spin. You know, Obama went to Elkhart, Indiana, you know, Wednesday.
Yeah.
And had the town meeting, you know. And you can just imagine all these, you know, anyway. Obama's just, you know, telling people the sky's blue when they know it's gray.
That's right. I know. I know. It's absolutely amazing. And it's also true on the other side, meaning people that will make up numbers or take numbers of how horrible it is when it's not. So I always like the saying, and I always like to remind myself, too, to try to remind myself not to have my own confirmation bias by grabbing just certain numbers, right?
Right.
But that's this, right? It's statistics lie and liars use statistics. And that is so super true. And politicians are perfect at it, where they're just grabbing up. Hey, the unemployment rate's 4.7%. That shows how bad it is, because nobody's going even looking for work anymore, Mr. President.
Well, you know, speaking of numbers and how a good number is actually bad, you know, they used to keep score, if you remember, during the Vietnam War, about casualties, about our casualties were much less than theirs. Sounds good.
Right.
But it's actually not, because they've got a lot more fighters that are joining up.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, and that's exactly what, hey, you know, we're doing good because we killed more of them than vice versa. But it's, you know, obviously it's the reverse.
We all have to be careful of our own confirmation bias in grabbing the numbers we believe and ignoring the others. It's very, very hard to do that. But I do think when it comes to the jobs numbers, there's some basic things to look at. Workforce participation is big. And when you say we're at 40-year lows, that's really bad. That's super bad, okay?
Uh-huh.
The second part that I always point to is the U6. That's the unemployed, the underemployed, okay, and the people who have flat given up.
Well, you know, what gets me is, and they talk about when things are good, more people join the workforce, start looking for work, right?
Right.
And it's almost like all these people have an Apple device or whatever, and they're plugged in, and they'll be sent little messages all of a sudden, you know, like, now things are good, get out there and look for work. And I'm just wondering how these people all of a sudden, you know, individually think at this particular point in time things are bad, but all of a sudden at this point in time it's good, so I'll get off my couch and go look for work.
Yeah, I know. Well, we all have to be careful of whatever our inputs are, whatever the messages are, and that we actually do go out and engage in the world. All right, Jim, I'm going to cut you loose, buddy.
Take care.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You're not going to believe this, but we're like going to consolidate all of our commercials. It'll be like 12 minutes straight. No, it's not. It's a normal commercial break, but we are then clear all the way to the end of the hour. That means please do give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer, email and get those going now. This will be our final break, and then we'll have a nice big block to deal with all of that on the other side. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number. And there's nobody online. I don't understand that. I don't. There's a lot going on. I'm sure you have questions out there, so please shoot those over. We have plenty of time left in today's program, about 12 minutes left. That's a long haul. And right now I am going, oh, and if you prefer email, that's fine, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. So let's go ahead and go to an email. All right. Hi, Dave. Would you address the bucket approach to investing for a retired couple in their late 60s? Currently, we have about 85% of our money, about $500,000, in a well-diversified portfolio and will not need the income from that for at least 5 years. The other 15%, or $100,000, is in an online bank earning about 1% a year. We pull some of this for monthly income and financing, travel, and other miscellaneous expenses. Thanks. Hey, PJ, this is a great question, and thank you for it. The bucket approach, where people are putting in different buckets, I don't. I've gotten in some pretty vibrant arguments with advisors about this, because the bucket approach in its simplest form, when interest rates are higher, is fine, where you take and you segregate 1 to 3 year money. That's bucket one. And that'd be your 1% expenses, and meaning not just what you're not just some 15% number, but what you're really going to need for income. So I think you're a little high on that, is what I'm saying, but I'll circle back to that. And then you have a 3 to 7 year number, and then you've got the 7 or 10 year plus number. And that's going to be all stocks, and then one's all bonds and one's all short term. And that's all it is. It's real simple. And then you are waiting for the 10-year bucket. But here's the problem with all these. I'm going to spend down automatically bucket one, and then I'm going to go to bucket two, and then I'm going to go to bucket three with no intermingling at all. At all. So let's just say in this example, we get to have a great market. Like you retire, and then there's a great market. And so the money you have in the third bucket or fourth or whatever it is doing great. I mean, really great. Here's what I would do. Take the investments out of what is doing really great, better than expected, and spend that. Leave your bucket. You don't have to define it and then spend down buckets by that. Let the markets dictate what bucket you spend from. Okay? In other words, that's why I prefer the reservoir. In the reservoir, you have this, and then you've got some rainwater coming in, meaning interest and dividends coming into that, and then you design a portfolio that makes sure we also have a little bit left in the reservoir if the market tanks. And then we replenish the reservoir by selling off assets that are doing well. That is the only way I know how it works, especially in a zero interest rate environment. Zero. It takes more thought in my mind. So I don't like the classic bucket approach. Especially, I hate it now with zero interest. Because what you're saying with a bucket with a bunch of money sitting in bonds or in cash is I want this bucket to lose value every year to inflation. I don't. And the buckets have way too much money in them now because you're not earning any interest. So there's way too much money in, which then leads me to this point. Then we're relying too much on the other bucket of stocks to outperform in order for us to handle it. So, again, I generally speaking, that's fine. It's the same type of approach, but I think we need to modify it. And it doesn't mean we modify with the twisting winds, but we modify with reason. I can't get any earnings. So, in one sense, I don't want very much money in cash. And on the other hand, I don't want much money in growth that's not generating income. I want to bring both ends of the risk spectrum, if you will, towards the middle where we're producing income from multiple sources, and I really don't rely on asset sales as much. Okay? So generally, we want things raining in, rainwater into our reservoir consistently so we don't drain the reservoir as quickly. So I think you have a great idea, but I would like to address it this way. I think you have way too much sitting in a 1% account, way too much. I would have income generation coming into to take care of what you're going to need, let's say 2 years to 3 years from now, would be all generated from income from investments. So we don't have to have as much sitting there earning next to nothing. So I'd like to see that number come down. I like your idea. I like the concept. Generally, I just think we need some modifications of the classic bucket approach. PJ, great question. Thank you. And now let's go ahead and go to, I don't know. Hi, Dave. Maybe choose from the following, no particular order. Okay, there you go. How about Micron cutback rumors? I just tuned in at 9, I'm sorry. And you may have talked about it. No, I have not talked about it at all. And, yeah, good question. I don't know what's going to happen with Micron. Honestly, who does, right? We don't know what's going on out there, but except that all companies in the tech space are really cutting back dramatically, very dramatically. And cutbacks seem to be the way that businesses are being operated now. So I hope for the people in the Valley here that those layoffs are not. The rumors are going to be, you know, at least tempered. There won't be as many, but it certainly feels that they're cutting through. Now, I've said this before, and I know people take this kind of harshly, and I don't mean it that way. But in all businesses, it's been proven. I'm just going to tell you, it's been proven to be healthy for a business to go through periodically and to just have a mandatory 5%, even up to 10% layoff. Not that you won't be rehiring the very next month. But going through and assessing the workforce the same way a football team or anybody else is going to have, you know, people cut every year, is the best way to have a healthy environment. And I it's so brutal. I certainly don't sit around and do that at our place, but it is a healthy thought process, at least, to go through various departments, say, you know, these people are not cutting it. Let's bring in some fresh people. All right. So hopefully it's going to be more along those lines than any kind of a real downturn for Micron. A life insurance agent claims that Whole Life will produce tax-free income that will not be affected by the market. How is that possible? Where would the money come from? You know, that's a great question, and it's a big question. So I'm going to try to touch on it in a small way, and maybe we can address this in the future, okay? I remember years ago, I was on a board, and I'm going to kind of preface the whole thing this way. And it was an advisory board to an insurance company, and I was arguing about the investment characteristics of life insurance, arguing against it, frankly. And one of the fellows in there turned around and he said, "You know what? I've been doing estate planning for a long time, meaning I'm working with high-end people. I've never once seen one person retire on insurance. Not once. I think Dave's right. It's not an investment." It doesn't because I agree with him. I just thought it was a very simplistic way of saying it. I've never seen anybody retire on that. That's not what the people retire on. Never have I seen that in all my years in insurance. So I thought it was a very interesting point, very simple. So let's go back to this. What is the claim? Yeah, income, taking money out of an insurance policy is tax-free. If you follow all the right rules, you have to borrow against the policy, which typically means you have to pay interest against on the policy. It also means it could self-destruct very easily. You have to be very careful with that. It has to be done just right. But if you create a loan and you borrow against it, and then when you die, the loan is paid back with tax-free dollars, so you don't ever have to be taxed on it. The problem is that a whole life policy is either one of two things. It's tied into the market. It could be. They have variable life insurance. The second part is, what kind of earnings are you getting in insurance companies? They're having a terrible time. They're raising internal costs of everything, not just health insurance. They're raising the premiums for auto insurance. They're raising the premiums inside the life insurance to the guarantees into your nursing home policies. All of those are going higher. Why? Because interest rates are so low. They can't earn anything on the reserves. What do you really think your rate of return is going to be on an insurance policy? If somebody really wants tax-free income, then buy municipal bonds. They don't have the cost of insurance tied to them. If you need a life insurance policy, you can, because when you die, people need money, then buy a life insurance policy. But you do not invest for your retirement in insurance products. You just don't. It just doesn't work. If the market is flat, how can my portfolio go up? Or if the market or a fund I own goes from 100 to 80 to 100, how does my value go up? Does the market fund always have to go to a new high for me to increase in value? The answer is no, it does not. It's a great question. If the market's flat, but you're producing income, in other words, you have dividends that are being reinvested, you're actually compounding and buying more shares that are also doing, they're doing two things. They're not just producing more income because you've compounded more shares. Uh-uh. They're also, the corporations inside there have historically, not every year and not every company, but historically over time, they pay more and more per share. So you're getting more shares and corporations are raising their income. So if the objective is I want a steady stream of income faster than inflation all the days of my life, what better than having a flat or even a down period to compound the dividends during your growth phase? It's perfect. So a fund that goes from 80, right, or 100 to 80, and you're reinvesting, then what happens when it falls to 80 and on the way down? Like when it hits 90 on its way down, then you have 10% more shares earning income the very next quarter or month than you would have had if it stayed at 100. 10% more for free. You didn't put more money in. Just saying. And each of those shares begins immediately compounding itself. Then it goes down to 80. Then that 20% means you now are compounding with 20% more shares for free. For free. Nothing. And each of those shares, once again, compounds and begins earning income, and now 20% higher income the very next quarter. It's really astounding. And when you look at the numbers, and you're welcome, any of these questions, we've got all kinds of stuff on this, where you do like rolling three-year periods on funds that pay high income, five-year periods. You just can't even imagine the numbers. It just, I don't want to get too excited here about it, but when the markets are down, that's your best friend when you're accumulating money. I know it doesn't feel like it, but people have got to come to understand this. When you have down markets, you have flat markets, and you're compounding, that's when you're winning. You're really winning big. It just hasn't shown up yet, right? It just hasn't shown up. It's the same thing. Most of the money you make in the market is made in the bear markets. You just don't know it at the time. You don't know it at the time. But you're positioning it, you're hanging in there, you're compounding, and you're dollar cost averaging, whether it's from the dividend reinvestment or your new investment, if you have the courage to add to it, that's when people make money, is in the bear markets, and then the bull market, it shows up. Thank you so much for the email. Great stuff. Thanks again, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. Please do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And right now, let's go ahead and go to the phones. David, thanks for calling.
Hey, no trouble. Yeah, another Dave to call in. Hey, you know, I wanted to ask you, I've taken enough science as well as economics and financial management to realize that there's something enormously phony going on here. And I guess what I'd really phrase it as is the laws of physics versus the laws of economics. You know, people realize that there are laws of physics that we humans are subject to, but when you start getting these guys in the skyscrapers dreaming up their projects, they're basically claiming that they can defy the laws of physics and call it externalized costs. So when you start, I heard you describing, you know, some of the, you know, the ideas of investing overseas or whatnot. And as far as I can tell, the only reason why the gain is really happening in all of these offshore projects is because people are jerking the currency rates around. For example, I remember a number of years ago, this is basically, I think in the early 80s, used to be the peso, you'd get 16 pesos to the dollar, but these old boys jerked the currency around so much, it got to be 30,000 pesos to the dollar. And that, you know, that was wasn't even as bad as pre-World War II Germany with, you know, they had to have wheelbarrows full of money in order
to
buy
that,
a
that
loaf
wasn't
of bread.
From jacking it around. It's because the currency became worthless. It's the same with the banana republics of Brazil and Argentina, they basically had to have a restart. They melted down. That wasn't people playing with currency. It was runaway inflation, devalued, like they're having right now in Venezuela from their wonderful socialist experiment.
Well, again, that gets into intentional destruction of an economy in order to basically steal everything they've got.
David, I gotta at least say there's steal what by whom? Because
well,
when you're talking about the Banana Republic, well, hold on. When you're talking about the Banana Republics, if it was a good idea to have thousands of pesos and thousands of percent inflation running rampant in your country, then Venezuela would be getting better and better, not worse and worse, and Brazil would be doing the same. And Brazil back in the 1980s would be the king of the world when they dealt with 20,000% inflation.
Doesn't Venezuela have plenty of oil? They have something like a quarter of the world's oil reserves.
They have a lot, but if you don't have, if you have vast corruption and a socialist system that is that is devastating your economy, how are you going to get it out? I don't understand the point.
That's not what's going on in Venezuela. That what's going on in Venezuela is the Saudi Arabians. You know, the reason a year or so ago when the price of gasoline dropped like $2 a gallon, how in the world, what magnificent law of economics happened that the price of gasoline dropped so far and so fast is that the Saudi Arabians were intentionally doing product dumping. Now, if
that's a law of economics, right? We had oversupply going on in the world.
That's against the law to do product dumping. And every nation in the world can, if Walmart came into your town and did product dumping, they would drive every small business under.
Okay, all right. So, David, what are you suggesting? I'm not sure what the point is. I'm not sure the point.
Well, I'll stick with the Saudi Arabians and get back to this law of physics versus the law of economics. So, as you're probably aware, I mean, do you agree that the Saudi Arabians are doing product dumping by intentionally dumping so much gasoline on the market that that they're intentionally trying to ruin Russia, they're intentionally trying to ruin fracking, they're intentionally trying to ruin alternative energy because they're trying to create so much cheap energy by product dumping that they're intending to ruin the economy in the other sectors so that they can keep market share.
They can keep market share. I agree. And I don't understand what economy it's ruined. We have $2 a gallon cheaper gasoline, to your point, than we did. That's okay.
It's not okay.
It's not okay. It's not okay to have cheaper gasoline.
It's not okay when it goes so low that, see, the Saudi Arabia.
What is the cause of it going from $25 a barrel to 50? Did the Saudis stop pumping?
No, it didn't just stop at 50. It went down to $10 a barrel. And this was because the other reason why it happened was the ISIS had captured so many oil fields that they were selling their gains illegally. They were selling, you know, if ISIS goes in and captures some of the biggest oil fields in
okay,
in
David,
Iraq,
David, okay, let's move on. What is the point of your economics versus you're talking about here? So,
well, do you agree that ISIS was illegally selling gasoline?
David, they were. You're right.
Okay,
that's how they fund their empire. You're right. Did they get caught what?
Selling illegal gasoline. No, they didn't get caught.
Okay.
We have GAT.
David, please make your point. I'm running out of time. I'm almost done here. Hurry.
Well, you've been yammering all morning about market forces and investing overseas, but the fact of the matter is it's a snake pit over there, and we used to have stability here because we had some laws, and these laws are not being protected. They're not being, in fact, the Republicans are intentionally slashing the budget for the courts so that nobody can gain any ground in the courts, and they're intentionally allowing these pirates to gain in worldwide markets. So if you think that you can just go overseas and invest, you're out of your mind because there are no laws to protect you to get your money if you get ripped off.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yep. You're right. There's no laws in Europe. There's no laws globally.
What happened to Greece? And Greece is part of Europe, right? Greece got ripped off by LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate.
Right. That had nothing to do. Okay.
The world has been ripped off by LIBOR, and they're not being prosecuted.
Okay.
So that's exactly true. And this is why people.
So the LIBOR rate is what took down Greece. It wasn't anything to do with 50-year-olds retiring on pensions and not collecting any taxes. Thank you, David.
You're overreading it. you're overreading it because people jerked around the currency rates, and they've jerked around the interest rates, intentionally frauding them,
okay,
and intentionally pretending that it's a part of baby boom getting older when they knew that this was corruption.
Okay,
and,
David, and thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, all right. If you have any comments or questions, dave@petsofinancial.net is perfect. If you would like to shoot over any comments and questions during the week. What do I owe you, a minute and a half? Is that what you told me? All right, thank you. We are just about out of time then. What do we, I got another minute yet, right? All right. All right, so let's go back. I want to talk about this real quick. Again, if we can just set this in place. Analysis to paralysis. The dreaded disease. Combined with confirmation bias that all we read, all we know, is it confirms what we already believe. It does not help us in investing at all. Buying into rising streams of income from corporations that sell all over the globe. It's not like you're taking this high-risk plunge into something you don't even know. So many of these corporations have been in existence for years. Years and years. And we get the ability to watch them and watch them grow and then buy in. Now, if we want to, we can spend all of our days and nights figuring out what's wrong with the world. Or we can also know that there are some things that are going right and technology and growth is occurring. I hope everybody has a great, wonderful Memorial Day weekend.